This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, May 24th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, a new poll shows the overwhelming majority of Coloradans regard the rising cost of living as a serious problem. We dig down into the data. Ships that run on ocean plastic? We'll have that story and more on This Week in Water. And we'll go to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth? Today's science show features part one of the annual graduation special. Guests are three graduating PhD students from the Computer Science Department of the University of Colorado Boulder. They will talk about their thesis work and experience in grad school. At 9 a.m. comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, Ginger Perry will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
The Adams County Sheriff's Department closed all I-70 eastbound lanes at Air Park Road near Watkins early this morning in response to a safety incident and an officer-involved shooting. Nine News reports the incident began when police attempted to make a traffic stop overnight and a chase ensued. According to an early morning tweet from the Adams County Sheriff's Office social media account, the suspect is in critical but stable condition at an area hospital. Officials are asking anyone needing to travel through the area to use an alternate route. The Environmental Protection Agency announced Monday the agency has reached an agreement with Xcel Energy over its noncompliance in managing coal ash waste at the Comanche Power Station in Pueblo. Under the settlement, Xcel will design and implement a groundwater monitoring system along with other corrective measures. Xcel Energy will also pay a fine of $925,000 and develop a closure plan for the coal ash impoundment. The EPA says it will oversee all of Xcel's work. According to the EPA, coal combustion residual waste can contain harmful levels of contaminants like mercury, cadmium, and arsenic. Without proper management, the waste can pollute waterways, groundwater, drinking water, and the air. Governor Jared Polis signed legislation Monday simplifying the adoption process for parents who conceive children through assisted reproductive technologies. Under state law, a parent must adopt their own child when their partner has given birth using assisted reproduction. An LGBTQ plus parent attempting to become the legal parent of their own biological child can encounter a costly, burdensome, and lengthy process involving in-home evaluations, background checks, legal fees, and court appearances. The new law will remove many requirements, such as criminal record searches, fingerprinting, home visits, and in-person court hearings, and instead will allow parents to file a petition supplying basic information such as a birth certificate. The court will then certify proper petitions within 30 days. The state of pediatric mental health in Colorado received another blow as the Aurora Mental Health Center will discontinue day treatment programs for youth. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The Aurora Mental Health Center, AMHC, announced it is discontinuing its regional Hampton Youth Campus programs at the end of the school year. Centennial Colorado reports that this will put additional strain to the already stretched thin resources for pediatric mental health. The programs AMHC is discontinuing include Metro Children's Center, that served kids in grades kindergarten through 8th grade, and Hampton Academy, which serves youth in 8th through 12th grades. A third program, Intercept Day Treatment, was not in operation this year because the health center was not able to hire enough teachers to staff it. AMHC leaders decided to halt the three-day treatment programs after careful consideration of current operating challenges, including diminishing referrals and enrollments and decreasing financial viability due to changes in how behavioral health programs receive funding from the state. Mental health providers have said in the past that the state's system is convoluted and inefficient. AMHC did say that Intercept Outpatient Services, a program for children and youth with overlapping behavioral health and intellectual development disabilities, will continue uninterrupted. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Boulder County is teaming up with a wildfire preparedness organization to assess properties for fire risk. KGNU's James Swenson has more.
A group known as Wildfire Partners is currently assisting over 3,000 Boulder County residents to assess their properties with fire mitigation in mind. The foothills and mountain areas have been the primary region for preparedness, but the group is launching a pilot program to add the eastern part of unincorporated Boulder County to the service area. Services include a free on-site home assessment with a wildfire mitigation specialist in which residents can learn how to secure their homes and create defensible space to reduce the ignition potential of their property. The initial rollout of this program will include 100 homes in the eastern part of Boulder County, the area hardest hit by December's Marshall Fire. Interested residents can apply through the program's website at www.wildfirepartners.org. Applications are due by June 30th, 2022. For KGNU, I'm James Swenson.
The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment announced Monday it has received a $2 million grant from the United States Environmental Protection Agency to advance cleanup and revitalization of brownfield sites in Cortez, Evans, Firestone, Longmont, and Lyons. The CDPHE defines a brownfield as a property where environmental contamination may complicate or hamper redevelopment. Sites considered for the grant award include historical, vacant commercial and industrial buildings, gas stations, dry cleaners, sites with abandoned equipment and vehicles, and a former turkey farm with abandoned structures. The CDPHE said it partnered with the five communities in submitting the grant proposals, and it will work with local governments to inventory and prioritize cleanup at the sites. The agency also plans to conduct environmental site assessments, which will research the current and historical uses of the properties and determine if the uses have affected soil and groundwater and posed environmental or human health risk. According to the CDPHE, the award is the first time the EPA has offered statewide grants to states and tribes, and for a majority of the communities selected for this year's funding, the proposed projects are in historically underserved areas. Today's weather includes a 30 to 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly in the late afternoon hours for Denver and Fort Collins, and after 1 p.m. for Boulder. Today's highs will be in the upper 50s. Tonight will be cloudy, along with a chance of showers and thunderstorms continuing in the evening hours. Tonight's lows will be in the upper 30s. The current temperature in Boulder is 43 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. New data shows an overwhelming majority of Colorado residents view the rising cost of living as a serious problem. Many are feeling the pinch in their own lives. A new poll from the Colorado Health Foundation shows that around one in three Coloradans have worked multiple jobs or more than they wanted to pay for housing. Joining me now to dive into the data is Jace Woodrum, Senior Officer of Public Opinion Insights for Colorado Health Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Before we get into the details, I see this new poll on housing and the cost of living as part of a broader suite of surveys being carried out by the Colorado Health Foundation. Talk about the big picture of the research that's coming out between now and the end of June.
Absolutely. Well, we conduct an annual poll every year. This is our third year now, and we do it to really hold up a mirror to Coloradans and reflect back their experiences, their worries, and their priorities. This year, we have so much that we've learned that we're rolling it out in a series of phases. So we're starting with data on cost of living and housing. We'll shift next to data about health and well-being, from healthcare access to mental health, and then we'll wrap it up, and we're really committed to transparency. So we'll make everything available. Every question will be released, and all of the in-depth details of the data will be available for folks to dig into.
Focusing on the new findings, looking at cost of living and housing specifically, what are the standouts?
You know, it's really been just a year since we heard in our poll that Coloradans were feeling some confidence in a rebounding economy. Our first time in the field in 2020, there was widespread concern about the economic impacts of COVID. We saw some increasing confidence last year and this year now, this overwhelming sense of struggle and financial instability. So we're seeing that show up in a lot of different ways. We've got more people saying I'm worse off financially than a year ago, more people worried about affording food for their families, more people are worried about being able to pay their rent or their mortgage. And just that kind of financial instability is really showing up across the board. And for some people, it's not just worry about the future, it's also the difficult sacrifices that they're making right now. We've got more people skipping meals because they can't afford food, and that has an impact on their health and well-being.
And when we say overwhelming majority or overwhelming concern, we're talking about in the range of 88%.
So 88% of Coloradans said the rising cost of living in this state is a very or extremely serious problem. When you dig under that, there are even more troubling numbers. We have 30% of people who say they're worried about losing their home because they can't afford the rent or the mortgage. That is a really shocking number. It's up 9 points from last year. And thinking about folks having to couch surf or being on the street because they can't afford to pay the rent or a mortgage, that's a really staggering figure.
And you mentioned 9% since last year, but you've been doing these surveys for 3 years. How does it compare to when you first started doing these surveys?
So the concern about cost of housing and the number of folks who are struggling to afford the rent or the mortgage, that has been a consistent increase now for 3 years. And I'll tell you, it's important to note that this is not impacting all people equally. So people who are already living on low incomes, Latinos, Native Americans, and people with disabilities, they're all more likely to be struggling.
And it's interesting to note that what have been, you know, long standing hot button issues that political actors have used to get voters to the polls, issues like immigration, taxes, infrastructure, those don't seem to be so much of a concern anymore.
Now, when you're worried about affording food to feed your kids, when you're worried about whether or not you can pay the rent, there's really nothing else that can top the list ahead of taking care of our families. And that's what Coloradans across the state are trying to do. But there are real barriers that are standing in the way.
And you mentioned that certain groups are far more vulnerable financially, face an instability that other groups don't normally key into. Your survey broke down various demographic groups. I mean, also the people who are wealthy, people who are homeowners. I mean, what are some of the notable differences in priorities and concerns among different breakout groups?
So people who are living on low income is a really critical group to take a look at. Across income levels, we see concern about the rising cost of living. So if you make $100,000 or more, 83% say cost of living is a problem. If you make $50,000 or less, 94% say cost of living is a problem. So I would consider that across income, right? But it's only people who are living on low income who are having to make those difficult sacrifices. One third of people making $50,000 or less have skipped meals in the last year because they couldn't afford food. Compare that to only 4% of those high income earners. And we see that while we can all agree rising cost of living is a concern, it's a problem, we're nervous about it, we're talking about it at the dinner table, it's really only people living on low income, not higher income earners, who are feeling the pinch and the pressure. I also want to draw attention to Native Americans. It's rare at state level data to have enough conversations with Native Americans that we can really look at the data with confidence. And we had some amazing community partners who helped us talk to more Native Americans. And there's a real story here that we need to be paying attention to. We've got a majority of Native Americans saying they're worse off financially than a year ago. 6 in 10 say they're worried about being able to afford food. 4 in 10 have skipped meals. I mean, that is something that data that we're fortunate to have, but really numbers that are shocking, and we've got to pay attention to them.
And finally, where can listeners find more information about your polls and dig into the data themselves?
We try to make it all available and usable at copulsepoll.org.
Well, thank you, Jace Woodrum, Senior Officer of Public Opinion Insights for the Colorado Health Foundation. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
We will be right back after this quick break.
This Tuesday on Hemispheres, join us when we have a very special guest, Kristen Iverson, the author of the best-selling book, Full Body Burden, Growing Up in the Nuclear Shadow of Rocky Flats. Also joining Kristen Iverson, another special guest, Kathleen Sullivan, talking about the international treaty she worked on, the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which was approved at the UN. Finally, members of the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center talking about the legal challenges to the opening of the wildlife refuge at Rocky Flats. All that and more when you tune into Hemispheres this Tuesday at 6.
Time now for the latest edition of This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
Ships that run on ocean plastic. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The prolonged dryness in the West has led to some desperate ideas about how to get water into parched areas.
Last week, a group of lawmakers in Utah voted to study a plan to pump seawater 700 miles from the Pacific Ocean to the Great Salt Lake, which fell to its lowest level in recorded history last year.
According to the Salt Lake Tribune, some environmentalists call it a crazy idea. A pipeline, they say, would degrade the landscape it crosses and disrupt the lake's chemistry. Instead, a better option would be for the state to figure out how to use less water.
As that plan was under consideration, a new study shows that areas of Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming may have less water due to climate change and could be transformed into regions that more closely resemble the arid Southwest, like Arizona.
The research from the Los Alamos Laboratory shows that there will be earlier snowmelt and stream flow, requiring reservoir managers and planners to adjust.
The study showed that particularly in the Green River area, where the three states border each other, there will be more arid conditions and higher elevations, seeing less snowpack as temperatures continue to rise.
The oceans are full of plastics, from water bottles and takeout containers to abandoned fishing nets. Cleaning up the waste is challenging, but two new projects are underway that could turn that trash into treasure using ships that convert garbage into renewable fuel.
One of the efforts is led by Gaia First, a Paris-based NGO, which plans to build a ship that will work round the clock, gathering plastic and then process it into either green hydrogen or green ammonia.
Green hydrogen can be used to power electric motors and is 2 to 3 times more efficient than internal combustion engines running on gasoline. Green ammonia is made using renewable methods and can be used in fertilizers.
The collection ship would use a smaller vessel to corral the trash, and Gaia First says it could eliminate 25 tons of plastic a day.
A similar endeavor to convert ocean plastic into energy is being developed by H2 Industries from New York. Besides collecting the waste and converting it to hydrogen, the company says it already has plans for all-electric ships powered by the fuel to replace replace diesel and heavy oil used by cruise ships, tankers, and container vessels.
The so-called Internet of Things, or IoT as it's known, is a term that describes a network of connected devices that interact and exchange information. Most people are familiar with IoT through smart appliances in their homes or wearable technology like Fitbits, but it's also used in drones to monitor crops or in sensors that operate traffic lights.
Although the devices individually only require low power, the exponential growth of these smart things will require a lot of energy that, given the climate crisis, will need to be produced using renewables.
With that in mind, researchers at the University of Cambridge turned to algae, specifically a non-toxic cyanobacteria called blue-green algae that naturally harvests energy from the sun through photosynthesis and produces an electrical current.
In their experiment, the team put algae in water in a small container on a windowsill and let it do its thing. As it photosynthesized, electrons interacted with an aluminum electrode to power a computer microchip.
And it never stopped. So long as the algae had water and light, it kept chugging away. It even produced power at night, which the researchers attributed to the organism still munching some of its food in the dark.
The system, which is the size of a AA battery, is made with common, inexpensive, and largely recyclable materials, and the researchers say it could provide a reliable and renewable way to run small devices, especially in off-grid or remote locations.
And finally, who doesn't like a good spa day to look and feel your best? Well, according to new research, dolphins are no different and visit coral clinics to keep their skin healthy.
Researchers from the University of Zurich, working in the northern Red Sea near Egypt, observed dolphins rubbing their bodies against corals and sponges.
The behavior seemed purposeful as the animals politely waited their turn to pass over the corals, and they were choosy, brushing up against only the gorgonian and leather corals and a certain sea sponge.
The researchers found that the dolphins' activity was agitating tiny polyps in the corals to make them release mucus. The team even observed some of the animals taking bits of corals in their mouths and swinging them around to shake the compounds loose.
After analyzing samples of the corals in the lab, the team found 17 active antibacterial, antioxidative, and hormonal compounds. They think the dolphins are using the mucus to regulate their skin's microbiome and to treat infections, but it will take more study to say for sure.
According to the scientists, corals are both a dolphin's bedroom and playground, and because the animals routinely rubbed corals after napping, they're just like us. They want to feel fresh and clean before starting their day.
That's it for This Week in Water. Support comes from GC Green, a veteran, woman, and Native American-owned clean energy and resiliency solutions company. Learn more at gcgreen.com.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU.
I'm calling because I'm inspired by the story I heard on Metro within the last 2 weeks about the teacher in Denver, Tim Hernandez. It's too bad the way things turned out with Denver Public Schools, but I hope you can see the great opportunity that this situation is presenting to you and your supporters. Maybe you can offer your amazing teaching skills within an after-school program, a day camp, or even starting your own school where you can implement your unique teaching style and create your own rules. This is an opportunity for Tim Hernandez and his supporters to create their own educational model, to show Denver, the state of Colorado, the U.S., the whole planet, your way to educate with respect, dignity, and love for your hood and humanity. Wishing you all the best. Take care.
If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacy Johnson, James Swinson, Steve Miller, Jamie Sudler, and Franny Halperin for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after the news headlines from the BBC.
KGNU will host its annual plant sale on Sunday, June 5th. From May 18th through the 31st, we will be accepting donations of healthy plants and starts as well as gardening items in good condition from our Boulder station, located at 4700 Walnut Street, Monday through Friday from 9:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. For more information, email Sarah at kgnu.org or call 303-449-4885.
Check one, two. Hey, what's up, Dane?
What's up, Martine?
What are you doing this summer?
I'm not doing anything. Probably just playing video games.
Have you heard about KGNU's Youth Podcasting Summer Workshop?
No, I haven't. What is it?
It's a half-day summer camp. There will be sessions from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m., June 20th to the 24th, and July 11th to the 15th.
Whoa, that sounds cool. Will I get to use a microphone and be in the studio and stuff?
Yeah, you'll learn how to be a producer for community radio.
Whoa, does that mean I get to be famous?
Potentially, yes.
So where do I find more information about this summer camp?
Email me, that's martin at kgnu.org, or you can go to the website, kgnu.org.
Wow, thank you so much for putting me on, Martine.